This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 6th of December 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 6th of December. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: events cancelled in hall safety fears, suicide warning in family farm tax row, and significant milestone for EV charging hub. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is the events cancelled in hall safety fears. Several events have been cancelled at Winchester Guildhall after its ceiling crumbled, sparking fears and safety fears and leaving organisers in the lurch. Stalls have been set up for a wine tasting event on Saturday in Bapsey Hall, one of the city's largest function rooms, only for it to be called off at the last minute. One vineyard representative, who asked not to be named, said some of her colleagues were really upset as they rely on this festive fizz and other similar events organised by Vineyards of Hampshire as a key part of their trade and will now have to wait 6 months until the next one. She said all the wine bottles were out and they told us at 11 a.m. that it was cancelled. This news, which the woman described as devastating, provoked concerns about reimbursement, although she wanted to reassure members of the public who had paid for the £12 entry tickets that a full refund is available on eventbrite.co.uk. Another event cancelled was Dance Yourself Dizzy, a modern jive class which costs £10 for entry and is held every Tuesday. On Tuesday evening, a notice stuck to the main entrance to the Guildhall said, "Tonight's Dance Yourself Dizzy has been cancelled. Apologies for the inconvenience." The Chronicle has contacted Dance Yourself Dizzy, as well as the press team for the Worth the Wait clothes sale scheduled for Sunday in the Guildhall, to ask whether events over the next few weeks will take place, but received no reply. The City Council, which owns the Guildhall, released the following statement: "We're very sorry that we had to cancel the Festive Fizz event, which was due to be held in the Guildhall on Saturday, November the 30th. The decision was precautionary and with people's safety in mind, following a small area of plaster falling from the ceiling of Bapsey Hall. We're sorry for the disappointment and inconvenience we know this would have caused, but safety has to be our priority. It could be a heavy financial blow for the City Council, coming at a very busy time of year. The Chronicle has asked the Council why people were allowed to enter the Guildhall on Saturday morning if there were safety concerns, but has not replied. There has also been no indication of how long the ongoing repairs might take or what caused this structural issue."
Suicide warning in family farm tax row. Aging farmers will kill themselves to prevent their families from having to pay increased inheritance tax on their land, according to one senior farmer. Alan Harting, the organiser for the National Farming Union, NFU, uttered the warning at a protest outside the Hampshire County Council offices in Winchester on Thursday, November the 28th. The protest came following the autumn budget, with Rachel Reeves introducing a cap on inheritance tax relief for farms, as well as a freeze on the farming budget. Addressing the protesting farmers before the county council meeting, Mr. Harting said, "The proposals from the government are going to cut agriculture off at the knees." He continued, "There is no point in me planting hedges to make their targets, because that will put the value of the farm up, and my children will have to pay tax. They don't understand quite what they've done. Also, there's a human side to this. We are hearing of people who have worked their whole lives on their farms and they're in their 80s and 90s. They don't have a pension because their income comes from the farm. Some are considering taking their own lives before April 2026 so their children are not disinherited. One farmer, Jonathan Janaway, of the 1,000-acre manor farm near Basingstoke, said he would have to sell 20% of his land if the new budget goes ahead. The 32-year-old told the Chronicle, "It is good that people are going to support us. I think the public do support us at the moment, and I would like to keep it that way." Kate Bayliss, 64, from Folly Farm in North Waltham, said, "I want to stand up for the little things. Farms are the hubs of their communities. They have a vital role in education and teaching children where their food comes from. Letting them visit the countryside and see how we operate is vitally important. We can contribute to tackling the climate crisis, the environmental crisis, and the biodiversity, nature recovery. Farming is all part of that. If the government looked and asked us, we hold a lot of the answers for the sort of thing that contribute hugely. We can argue until we're blue in the face about inheritance tax, and that is hugely important. But there are also smaller things that farms contribute to rural communities." And there's a photograph of a large group of people, and with a big poster saying why farming matters.
And our third and final headline is significant milestone for EV charging hub. The development of an electric vehicle, or EV, ultra-rapid charging superhub at Three Maids Hill near Winchester has reached a significant milestone. The asphalt layer has now been completed across the site, paving the way for the next phases of the project. This includes bay marking and charger installations. The superhub, developed by Instavolt, is set to have 44 ultra-rapid chargers powered by 100% renewable energy when complete. Devin Lane, the CEO of Instavolt, said, "Our Winchester site is the latest in a series of superhubs we're opening across the Instavolt network. And it's not just a new charging facility. It's a bold step towards creating a sustainable future for transport in the UK. We're thrilled to see such rapid progress at this site. The team and our partners have worked tirelessly to ensure the vision for this project becomes a reality." The Winchester Superhub is set to be one of the UK's most sustainable EV charging destinations. It is powered by an intelligent system that optimizes solar use, reduces grid reliance, and keeps the chargers running at maximum capacity. Solar panels with a 500 kilowatt capacity feed two on-site batteries, providing the primary power for chargers. The system will automatically switch to 100% renewable energy supplied by Octopus Energy when necessary. All 44 EV charger pads have now been fully installed, laying the groundwork for the deployment of the ultra-rapid charging units. More than 54,000 permeable blocks have been delivered, with 26,000 laid to create durable and environmentally conscious footways. The Winchester Superhub is designed to offer more than just charging, with an on-site cafe, accessible charging bays, and drive-through options for towing trucks. The Superhub will provide convenience and comfort for all EV drivers. Strategically located near the busy A34 and close to the M3, this superhub will cater for both long-distance travellers and local people. It underscores Instavolt's commitment to expanding the UK's EV charging network with dependable and accessible solutions, offering EV drivers the confidence to travel without range anxiety. And the project is being delivered in partnership with Parco Civil Engineering and Groundworks Limited, whose expertise has been instrumental in achieving these key construction milestones. And the article is accompanied by a couple of photographs. One is taken probably from a drone, showing the state at the moment with the asphalt layer now completed right across the site. And the other one is an artist's impression of what the EV ultra-rapid charging superhub will look like. Which all looks very fine and very green with trees and etc. all the way around it.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements and then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, First Person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Arnett, Maureen Arnett, née Wild, died on the 19th of November, aged 82. Beckwith, Susan Lorna Beckwith, died peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home on the 8th of November, aged 83. Bowler, Fred Bowler, died on the 17th of November, aged 88. Emery, John Charles Emery, died peacefully on the 23rd of November. Fletcher, Margaret Dorothy Fletcher, died peacefully at home on the 27th of November. Paris, Barbara Helen Paris, died peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home, aged 82. Pym, Charles Richard Pym, died peacefully on the 16th of November, aged 84. And Torb, Mildred Torb, died peacefully on the 5th of November, aged 97. And now we have Christian comment read by Andrew, please.
And this week's Christian comment is entitled Jesus and the Church Are Here for You. And it's written by Nigel Hemming, who's the senior pastor at the Winchester Vineyard Church. According to the stats, musicals are the most popular form of theatre in London. And one thing they seem to have in common is that just when the narrative is moving along, everything stops for the next character to sing. Whether a love song, a breakup song, a rally cry, a lament or a prayer, words set to music take on a whole new emotional resonance when they are placed in the mouth of a character with a backstory who is responding to current circumstances. We find this going on in the joyful song Mary sings during the opening of Luke's Gospel, having shared the news of her immaculate conception with her cousin Elizabeth. Oh, how my soul praises the Lord! How my spirit rejoices in God my Saviour! For he took notice of his lowly servant girl, and from now on all generations will call me blessed. That's Luke 1:46-48. This is a jubilant song of praise, boldness and courage. Mary was a nobody in the eyes of the world, a very ordinary, humble girl who was prepared to say yes to God and experience difficult social circumstances in order to play a part in his purposes being fulfilled. Tom Wright points out that Mary and Elizabeth shared an ancient dream of Israel, that one day all that the prophets had said would come true. Like so many Jews of their time, they searched the scriptures, soaked themselves in the Psalms and prophetic writings, which spoke of mercy, hope, fulfillment, reversal, revolution, victory over evil, and of God coming to the rescue at last. The next few verses sound like very much like a revolution as Mary sings how Jesus will grow up to bring down princes, raise up the humble, feed the hungry, and challenge the rich. This promised Messiah is going to change everything, and those who think they are powerful will be brought down, and those who are humble will be raised up. Tom Wright also describes this song of celebration as the gospel before the gospel. A fierce, bright shout of triumph 30 weeks before Bethlehem, 30 years before Calvary and Easter. It goes with a swing and a clap and a stamp. It's all about God and it's all about revolution. And indeed, throughout his ministry, Jesus continually reversed the power dynamics of the day, demonstrating that God is mainly interested in helping those who cannot easily help themselves. As Paul later commented, God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. It's 1 Corinthians 1:27. If you feel like an outsider with God or even with the church, I want to encourage you that you are exactly the kind of person Jesus is interested in. He is here for you, and the church is here for you as well. This Christmas, why not take the opportunity to find out more?
Thank you. Now we go on to letters to the editor. Nikki, please.
And this one headed no explanation, sorry, from John Kind. An overnight stay at Waterloo Station. I arrived at Waterloo Station to catch the on-time 7:35 p.m. train to Winchester on Wednesday, November the 27th. It departed at 5:30 a.m. on Thursday, November the 28th, 10 hours later. The reason given for the delay was that emergency services were dealing with an incident between Surbiton and Woking. The line had been blocked or closed. Passengers spent 4 hours on the train before being told that the service to Winchester had been terminated. We were instructed to get off to spend a further 4 hours on the station concourse before becoming aware that a train was available in which to take a rest. Southwestern Railways, SWR, and or Network Rail, NR, were not responsible for the track closure. However, they did not appear to have a contingency plan to deal with such an emergency at Waterloo Station. Junior staff were left to do their best, for example, by trying to book taxis, a futile gesture given the hundreds of passengers affected. Shouting at passengers rather than using microphones was annoying and ineffective. SWR/NR should surely have emergency procedures to organise coaches, to distribute the contact details of local hotels, and to offer medical support. If not, why not? On a very cold November night, we were left to our own devices, apart from Costa providing free refreshments. The emergency services did not provide an explanation at any stage. No doubt they were dealing with an extremely serious matter, but that is no excuse for failing to communicate. Passengers understand that it may not be appropriate to provide precise details. A general and regular update will do, but silence is not acceptable. Emergency services provide a service financed by taxpayers. Members of the public have a right to be informed when they are subjected, without warning, to considerable discomfort and inconvenience. And that from John Kind, Culver Road, Winchester.
What a week. What a week for the Anglican Church. Hours before the Archbishop of Canterbury's resignation, we learnt that the Dean, Catherine Ogle, will retire 7 years early on May the 1st, 2025, Chronicle November the 14th. Are we supposed to be surprised at her announcement, bearing in mind all the travails that have beset Winchester Cathedral recently? Bishop Tim standing down, the resignation of Dr. Andrew Lumsden. In the view of many, myself included, he was an outstanding director of music, yet his resignation seemed to have been occasioned by ignominious allegations of harassment and bullying. The advertisement for Dr. Lumsden's replacement was only available on the Winchester Cathedral website. The unexpected departure over recent years of a former director of music, George Castle, and an assistant organist. The resignation of Mark Byford, the senior non-executive director of Winchester Cathedral and Chapter. Members of the congregation walking out during sermons. The independent review of the governance of the cathedral commissioned by Bishop Mount Stephen, but not yet published. It is to have a specific focus on the culture and behaviour of the chapter and cathedral, relating to its choirs, governance, and the efficiency of leadership at chapter level. Falling congregation numbers are a significant reflection on a lack of confidence by current churchgoers in the future of the Anglican Church and, by extension, of its appointed leaders. Churchgoers at grassroots level, who are doing their best to lead Christian lives and help others in need, must feel betrayed by the actions of certain exalted Christians clad in ecclesiastical fancy dress. And that's from Una Stevens, Cliffway, Compton, Winchester.
Diabetes warning. Christmas is approaching and it's a busy time with preparations and extra food. As a charity for people with type 1 and type 2 diabetes, we know that it can be a difficult time for people with diabetes, especially if it's their first Christmas with diabetes. It can be a time of temptation, unpredictable or delayed meals, extra nipples, excitement and stress, all of which can make managing their diabetes more difficult. We have published our December newsletter, and we also have a free booklet, Diabetes at Christmas. This booklet gives various options for Christmas dinners, a recipe for homemade, lower carbohydrate and calorie Christmas pudding, and many other tips. All our booklets are free, and we are happy to send these out. Call 01604 622 837 or email inquiries@iddtinternational.org. And that's sent in by Jenny Hurst, who's the co-chair of the Independent Diabetes Trust, IDDT.
And it's headed Terrifying by Philip Glassborough. The article, Hampshire Together, discusses plans for a new £900 million hospital, November the 27th, raises a terrifying prospect of the future. Elizabeth Kerwood of NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight is quoted on the proposal for virtual wards. Let's say somebody had a heart failure and it's getting a bit worse. In the old days, we would say, all right, come in to the hospital. Now we might come and see you at home and bring some kit. And the kit might be a screen that you talk to, something that you put on your finger, and then digital platforms take your readings. Is this meant to reassure us about a proposal to shut down Winchester Accident and Emergency? Well, I have suffered heart failure, and I thank God that I was taken to A&E in Winchester. There I received wonderful, prompt and life-saving treatment. But Ms. Kerwood's proposal, that instead someone might come and see you at home, bringing a computer screen to interact with, is utterly horrifying. Wouldn't anyone with heart failure prefer to see a doctor in the A&E department rather than talking to a computer screen? And that for Philip Glassborough, Berwick Road, Winchester.
Speed it up. Might a closure for more than 1 month of Upper High Street, the car, cycle and pedestrian bridge over Winchester Station, to replace railings needlessly previously removed, to expedite an inconvenience to all be minimised if those involved in these works were actually working during this period? Despite regularly passing this area at different times of day and night, I have yet to see any work take place. They say Rome wasn't built in a day. But how in the 21st century can it be possible to take a month to replace a short run of fencing? And that's from Jane Gregson of the Grange, Alsford.
Playing safely. The Davis playing fields are an intrinsic part of the Badger Farm community and the only area where children can enjoy a genuine, safe area for leisure, kicking a ball about or just playing or having a picnic with parents. The playground, with many enjoyable swings and slides, is literally next to the kickabout, as chronicled on November the 28th. As a resident, literally a couple of minutes' walk away, it is a delight. And as the playing field has been as such for around 20 years and kept in perfect order, it really must become an official and protected village green. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And from Councillor Malcolm Wallace, headed Carbon Cuts. I wanted to take this opportunity to clarify, so correct, some of the claims that have been made about Winchester City Council's carbon reduction. Over the past 5 years, Winchester Council has made good progress in reducing their carbon emissions. The council has reduced energy consumption across its buildings. Energy is being generated from solar panels on several council properties. Retrofitting council homes with energy saving measures has started, and changes are being made to managing council land to store more carbon in nature. The improvements to date have made a difference not only to the environment, but also in reducing the council's ongoing energy bills. However, there's still a long way to go, and therefore it was disappointing to see that the administration has chosen to mislead residents on their achievements. 5 years ago, Winchester City Council set itself the goal of reducing its own carbon emissions to net zero by 2024, and last week's announcement implies that this goal has been achieved. Unfortunately, this claim is misleading. In order to declare success, at the last minute, the administration removed indirect, or Scope 3, emissions from the target. Simply put, instead of achieving the original goal of running 100 metres, at the last minute, the administration moved the finishing tape to the 50-metre mark and declared victory. Whilst achieving partial success is laudable, this is not the same as fulfilling the original commitment, as significant work still needs to be done. Global temperatures in 2024 are the highest they have been for at least 100,000 years. Each of us has a role to play if we are going to minimise the impacts of the climate crisis, but being honest about our progress has to be the first step. From Councillor Malcolm Wallace, Winchester City Council for Central Meon Valley, Swanmore.
Car free. For those residents living in the Worthies, they will have noticed that Worthy Lane has been recently closed to traffic. I would like to say how wonderful this has been. It makes cycling into town a pleasurable and safe experience. Instead of being squashed into not fit for purpose, narrow and bumpy shared use footpaths with lorries and buses and cars zooming past far too close for comfort, cyclists and pedestrians can now enjoy the journey and all the health, mental and physical benefits that brings. I have also spoken to friends who live in Abbott Spartan about how lovely and quiet it is without the constant traffic noise. It makes me think, wouldn't it be fantastic if the councils, Hampshire and Winchester, could get their heads together and perhaps do something to reduce the traffic on this road permanently? Perhaps limit the use to buses and cycles only. I know this will never happen, but it would be nice to think that someone in charge has a vision for the future of Winchester that doesn't involve transport revolving round the car, and maybe this could be the start. Bold and controversial, I know, but we need to make a start sometime. And that was from Joe Lowry's of Frampton Way, Kingsworthy.
And we have another letter concerning the cathedral, which represents a different view. And this is entitled, Sincere, Kind and a True Christian. How very sad to read Tim Loudon's recent letter, Chronicle Letters, November 28, A Toxic State. I know Tim well, and I also know the Dean of Winchester Cathedral well. I have had the pleasure of working with her for many years as I was the chairman of the Winchester Council. Tim relies on an article in The Spectator, and perhaps a few disaffected members of the cathedral congregation and or community. But the vast majority of the cathedral congregation, I am sure, think, as I do, that the Dean is sincere, kind, and a true Christian, and that her retirement will be a real loss. It should be recalled that the Dean runs the cathedral with chapter, and if criticisms are made about how the cathedral is run, she should not be singled out for blame. And, of course, the Bishop of Winchester has set up a review to look into the various matters concerning the cathedral, and that review has not yet completed its work. Overall, I urge all those who profess to be Christians to be kind and gentle and follow God's teaching about loving one's neighbour. And that was sent in by Jean Ritchie, KC, from Stockbridge.
Thank you. Now we move on to Chronicle editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed, Time for a Rethink on Farming Budget Plans. It is a shocking claim. We report that elderly farmers may kill themselves to prevent their families from having to pay increased inheritance tax on their land. That's the view of farmer Alan Harting, an organiser for the National Farmers Union, NFU, at a demonstration in Winchester last Thursday. He said some are considering taking their own lives before April 26 so their children are not disinherited. The farmers gathered outside the county council offices to highlight the impact of the government's changes to the cap in inheritance tax. The new rules are designed to catch the fat cats who exploit land ownership to avoid paying tax. But there are hundreds of land-owning farmers in Hampshire who will be caught out too because of the soaring value of land in the last 20 or 30 years. These people are not rich in any normal way, but happen to own land. Most of them farm it for 60, 70, 80 hours a week, 52 weeks of the year. Their profit margins are usually very thin. Many are one or two bad harvests from disaster. We rely on these people to put food on our tables and care for the countryside. An unintended consequence will be the further decline of family farms handed down the generations. Do we really want agribusiness taking over the countryside? Remote organisations with no proper feel for the land, its people and its traditions? Sadly, this controversy has again revealed a large urban antipathy to farmers, branding them all welly-wearing obnoxious Jeremy Clarksons. The government should rethink its proposals.
Thank you. Now we have our first person, please, Norma.
And this is entitled Being Thankful by Khaled Aziz. In the USA for Thanksgiving with a string of hospitable American friends. It's an interesting celebration. Originally a kind of harvest festival, always on the fourth Thursday in November. The celebration straddles Halloween, big in the US and now UK, and Christmas. Travelling through East Coast states from Pennsylvania to Maryland and Long Island, we pass a myriad of confused displays evoking all three festivals. Skeletons and spiders' webs, pumpkins and Happy Thanksgiving flags through to inflated Santas, elves and snowmen. All this against a background of heavy hangover from the presidential election a few weeks ago. Among the plethora of Trump banners, flags and bumper stickers, I spotted just one forlorn Harris Walz yard poster bravely clinging on in Delaware. My hosts tell me that the Democratic voters removed their placards of support immediately after the landslide result, while Trump supporters proudly left their flags flying in a kind of "We are the masters once again." Triumphalism. There is an attitude among most Democrats of rueful resignation, shaking their heads as they contemplate 4 years of no one is quite sure what, and looking askance at apparently unsuitable candidates for high office are put forward by the Mar-a-Lago, now dubbed the Winter White House, only to be withdrawn by revelations of past misdemeanors. Meanwhile, the holiday continues in desperate jollity. Happy holidays is the courteous greeting of dog walkers and others on their morning constitutionals. Happy holidays is also the go-to phrase for those not wanting to offend the sensibilities at welcome dinners and drinks for us Brits. The conversation starts with the many ways of cooking turkey and the all-important stuffing. They go in for a lot of brining of turkeys here, soaking the bird in salt water for 48 hours. It tastes all the better for it. Until the third drink, at least, we avoid any talk of the election result and what it might mean for the future. It's all reminiscent of how we skated around Brexit discussions after the referendum result. Thanksgiving Thursday itself kicks off at 8 a.m. with TV coverage of the Macy's Parade in New York. biblical rain did nothing to dampen the spirits of the crowds, which turned out in the usual large numbers to see giant helium balloons in the shape of Disney and other TV and film characters, held down nervously by teams of minders negotiating their charges through the skyscrapers of Manhattan. At ground level, various floats transported pop stars, unknown to us, but clearly beloved of the crowds, performing their latest hits. Only Kylie had internationally recognisable appeal. 4 hours later, with impeccable timing, the parade reaches the climax with the arrival of Santa Claus outside Macy's, and the TV channels give way to that other staple of holiday entertainment, American football, still impenetrable to those of us brought up on rugby. Next day, my online UK newspaper informed me that, perhaps unsurprisingly, there had been a Palestinian protest during the parade, dealt with by New York's finest. I would have struggled to have been made aware by the mainstream US media, although I am sure it was there somewhere. Turkey and pumpkin pie are not to be interrupted. Even though most of the leaves have fallen, it's a beautiful time of year with crisp mornings of vast blue skies. Everything here is big. There's lots of house building, but, as in the rest of the US, on a grander scale. Post-COVID US growth has been around 9%, far outstripping our sclerotic growth at home. So prices here seem high. Simple breakfasts out in a diner are north of $20 a head. At dinner, it's easy to spend much more. All this despite the pound recently doing much better against the dollar. So life goes on. Middle Americans' can-do attitude prevail. For them, like us, it's a case of wait and see.
Thank you, Norma. Andrew, we've got a couple of items from Belgarum, please.
Yes, and this is Belgarum with an alternative look at the news. Unsung Heroes of the Arts. A new podcast has been released showcasing the unsung heroes of the art world. The podcast, created by Rebecca Godden from Winchester, highlights the stories of those working across the creative industries, such as stage managers, costume designers, producers, and actors. The first episode, featuring Hampshire-based actor Yvonne Maxwell, debuted on November the 18th, with episodes every Monday. Upcoming episodes will feature a local actor-puppeteer and creative performer whose work includes Warhorse, Doctor Who, and Behind Her Eyes. A London-based creator and filmmaker whose work spans Netflix to the National Theatre, and a Winchester-based international director, writer and producer for outdoor, indoor and site-responsive performances. Rebecca said, "I wanted to create a space where these incredible professionals could share their stories. I hope this podcast helps those within the industry feel a stronger sense of connection and inspires those outside the arts to discover and appreciate the amazing people and the work happening behind the scenes." Rebecca graduated from Winchester University in 2013 with first-class honours in contemporary performance and returned to the area in 2021 after working as a multidisciplinary practitioner in London. And if those who know us, I would again say, well done to all the people who work backstage. The second article is The Band Plant Dies Back for Now. And this is something which had been highlighted previously by the Chronicle. It's a giant plant that in an ideal world would not be there. The Gunnera, or giant rhubarb, on the Weirs in Winchester has, since last year, been on a banned list of invasive species. Earlier this year, Belgarum highlighted the plant's presence shortly after the government placed it on the prescribed list. The recent cold snap has killed off most of the foliage, but the plant is likely to be safe and sound under the ground, ready to sprout again in the spring, when it will grow to more than 10 feet tall. It was added to the UK government's invasive species list in late 2023, meaning that it cannot be sold or cultivated, and where it is already planted, care must be taken to ensure that it does not spread. And we're grateful to the Chronicle for again highlighting that there's a picture here of the gunnera in the weirs, which is, as it says, just died out in the cold weather, but will return in the spring.
It will. Thank you. Now, this week's announcements. We start with what's on, and a couple of items to mention. Winchester Cathedral on Saturday the 14th of December has a Christmas concert, which is a festival of choirs, at 7 p.m. That's Saturday the 14th of December. There's over 100 singers from the various choirs of Winchester Cathedral chapter. So to book that, you can telephone the box office on 01962 857 275. That's the Winchester Cathedral box office, 01962 857 275. A reminder that the Winchester Christmas Market is setting the cathedral close, with authentic German-style chalets displaying high-quality gifts, and the market is open every day and runs until the 22nd of December. And some advance notice for the lovers of country music. There's a roadshow called Summer in Nashville, and that's coming to Winchester on Saturday the 5th of April 2025. The show will celebrate the music of acts such as Luke Combs, Dolly Parton and Johnny Cash. And tickets are on sale now at summerinnashville.com/Winchester. That's Summer in Nashville, all lowercase, all one word, summerinnashville.com/Winchester. A lighting up time ends Friday the 6th of December at 7:54 a.m. and begins at 3:59 p.m. On Wednesday the 11th of December, it ends at 7:59 a.m. and begins at 3:58 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. Excuse me. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki, please.
And this one headed Ho Ho Heroes on the Run as Santas Raise Charity Cash. Hundreds of Santas braved the utterly miserable conditions on Sunday morning to run around Winchester City Centre, raising tens of thousands of pounds for charity. The annual Santa Fun Run, which starts and finishes outside the Guildhall and raises money for local charity Naomi House and Jack's Place, was held for the 15th time in a joyous atmosphere in spite of the weather. This year was the first as the organisers decided to take a more environmentally friendly path by replacing the traditional Santa suits with Santa-style T-shirts. Making up for the lack of sunshine and resplendent in their disco ball outfits were fitness professionals Triff and Charlotte Rowe, who drive up to the event each year from Poole and are now an integral part of the fun run. "We love it," they said. Triff explained, "This is always one of the best events of the year, and this is the best ever. Can't beat it. And the amount of support we get, we were sold out this year, and to set an event out is huge." The organisers were delighted with this year's turnout of 750 runners and walkers who took on the 5-kilometre route. There was also a 2-kilometre option. Becca Pike, who helps make the fun run tick, was encouraged that the event continues to bounce back after having taken a hit during the pandemic. She said, "This is our fourth biggest year, especially after the pandemic. It really dipped, and now it's just growing year on year. We're about 200 participants up from last year. And sometimes we go above that because some people do go above and beyond." Paul Morgan, Director of Fundraising at Naomi House, said, "Well, other than being a bit wet, it's a magnificent event. We were sold out a few weeks ago with 750 people taking part, all of whom are helping raise funds, which is really important for us. So the crucial part of this is that we love putting it on. but the money that's raised is what matters most. Hopefully we should see more than £100,000. We're in our 15th year and we get so many returning participants, which is great. And this year, obviously, we have brand new T-shirts, so we have no Santa suits. And it's accompanied by a lot of photographs. And I know what they're talking about, rain and wet. They're all in the snow. I mean, there's deep snow. They're actually running in snow. I admit it might have melted all over them and made them very wet and soggy. But it looks fantastically Christmassy. And these T-shirts are red with sort of big buttons and false belts. And they all have a sort of bobble hat, not a woolly bobble hat, but a red hat, like a thing with a white bobble on the end. And various other outfits. Dog, there's even a dog in a Santa suit. And a woman with stripy legs, stripy arms, and it looks like a Christmas tree on her head. Interesting. But the final picture of when they've all finished, they're just rammed. There are so many, all there in their red Santa T-shirts, having run through what must have been very sludgy snow.
On a completely different vein, Nets ruled out to keep pigeon poo off landmark. A proposal to protect one of Winchester's most famous landmarks from pigeon droppings has been officially rejected by the government's conservation authority. Winchester's medieval buttercross on the High Street has significant deposits and staining from the bird's droppings, according to a previous report. But now Historic England has opted for an alternative pigeon deterrent in order to avoid putting up the intrusive netting. Consultants appointed by Winchester City Council said enclosing the monument with discreet stone-coloured netting might be the most effective way to preserve it. However, Historic England said it had rejected the option in favour of gels which deter pigeons from landing. A survey in 2023 found bird deposits, biological growth and damaged stonework on the 15th century monument in Winchester High Street. The council commissioned a conservation firm to propose pigeon deterrents as well as methods for cleaning and repairs. Consultants Philip Hughes Associates said optical gels which appear as flames or smoke to approaching birds were the most realistic option. However, the firm said they could only be used on flat surfaces, such as heads and feet, of the monument statues. It said netting or spikes could be used on other parts of the structure, but were visually problematic. Historic England said it agreed that netting would be intrusive. I'm absolutely intrigued about how a gel can appear as flames or smoke, but there you go.
See it through the eyes of a pigeon.
I do, yes, obviously.
Ev, this is another more sad one. Bank to close as footfall declines. A high street bank will close at the beginning of next year after its footfall more than halved since 2019. Halifax, which has operated at 129 High Street for more than 30 years, will close to customers on January 20th. A Halifax spokesman said, as many customers now choose to bank through their mobile app or online, visits to our Winchester branch have fallen over recent years. The local post office offers everyday banking, with cash also available at close by free-to-use ATMs. Customers can also manage their money through our mobile banking apps, online, by calling us, or speaking to a community banker. The bank recorded just 244 customers in the 12-month period ending in April 2024. That seems an incredibly low figure. A 61% decrease from the same period ending in April 2019. Moreover, almost 80% of its customers are 35 or above. The number of cash machine transactions has also suffered a steep decrease over the past 5 years, with 48% fewer withdrawals from the branch. This comes as a troubling spate of bank closures across the UK has left many parts of the country without any walk-in branches at all. Earlier this year, The Guardian reported that the number of bank closures over the past 9 years has passed 9,000. By the end of the year, this trend may leave 33 parliamentary constituencies, including two in London, without a single branch. The bank which has shut the most branches is Barclays, although its Winchester branch has so far withstood the onslaught of closures. Barclays said, "Where levels of demand don't support a branch, we maintain an in-person presence through our Barclays local network, live in over 350 locations, and based in libraries, town halls, mobile vans, and our banking pods." And there's a picture of the very famous Halifax Bank there in Winchester High Street, which is set to close.
Fly tipping leads to fine. A Surrey man has been fined after waste he paid to be removed was found in a fly tip on the A31 at Four Marks near Alsford. Freddie Loveridge of Brunner Court, Ottershaw, admitted to magistrates that he did not check whether the company he employed to take his waste away were properly authorised. On Thursday, November the 21st, in Basingstoke Magistrates Court, Loveridge was given a £200 fine and ordered to pay £150 compensation, £80 victim surcharge, and £300 of costs. Loveridge did not attend court on two occasions. Therefore, the court issued a warrant for his arrest. He was subsequently arrested and held in a police cell until the following day when he appeared in court. Loveridge admitted in his interview that he gave his business waste to anyone who was passing and made no checks and did not get a receipt or written description of the waste. Councillor Tony Costigan, East Hampshire District Council's portfolio holder for property, said, "Fly tipping is a serious issue. It damages the environment, it's harmful to wildlife, it's expensive to clear and it looks awful. We had 1,400 fly tips in Hampshire last year and it costs us thousands of pounds to clear up. For that reason, we have introduced our district team who investigate fly tips where possible and, where possible, prosecute the fly tippers or those who have enabled them. If it's your waste, it's your responsibility."
How our MPs voted on the assisted dying bill. MPs have voted in favour of assisted dying in the UK, but a majority of parliamentarians in South Hampshire voted against it. Newly elected Winchester MP Dr. Danny Chambers voted for the assisted dying bill. Dr. Chambers said, "The question of assisted dying is one of the most ethically complex debates we face as lawmakers. I approach my decision with an immense care, seeking as much knowledge and understanding as possible. This included reading extensively on the subject, meeting with doctors, lawyers, and representatives of religious organisations, and listening to the personal stories of my constituents. I have received a huge amount of correspondence on this issue, roughly split evenly in support of and against assisted dying. I appreciate the thought and care that went into each of those letters. I was also deeply moved by stories from constituents who shared the pain and suffering of their loved ones endured in their final days. While I strongly advocate for better palliative care and will continue to do so, I also recognise its limits. For those with less than 6 months to live, facing unrelievable suffering, the choice to end life on their terms offers a dignified alternative." Romsey MP Caroline Noakes did not vote, as she is a deputy speaker. MP for Southampton Itchen, Darren Paffrey, voted against the bill. He said on X, "I do not believe that circumstances are currently ripe for such a profound change in the law on assisted dying." Southampton Test MP Satvia Kaur also voted against. Here is how MPs in Southampton, Hamble Valley, Fareham, Gosport and Eastleigh voted on the Terminally Ill Adults End of Life Bill, which would make assisted dying legal for terminally ill adults who are expected to die within 6 months. MP for Hamble Valley, Paul Holmes, said that he didn't believe that the debate was enough to pass the bill at present. He said, quite simply, this will be the most important and challenging vote of my political career to date. Having studied the legislation, I'm going to vote against it on Friday. Whilst I hugely sympathise with the situation that many people find themselves in, I do not believe that the scrutiny and parliamentary mechanisms for this private members' bill are significant enough. Eastleigh MP Liz Jarvis voted for the bill and explained, having considered the Terminally Ill Adults End of Life Bill in detail, I agree with its fundamental aim, to help adults over 18 who have been diagnosed with a terminal illness and who have less than 6 months to live.
Councillors' Scrutiny Call. A Conservative member of Winchester City Council has questioned whether her colleagues are taking their jobs on the Scrutiny Committee as seriously as they should. Councillor Caroline Horrell, who sits as a deputy on the committee but is not actually in it, spoke sternly to its members at a meeting on November the 12th, calling for them not to skimp on discussions about the council's finances, waste disposal and sustainability. She said, on a general point, Chair, I just wanted to raise the fact that considering the length of the agenda this evening and the importance and the number of papers that you have before you, I question whether the commitment to scrutiny is as robust as it should be for this council. We seem to be curtailing some of the discussions because of time on some important elements of the council's business, and I would have hoped that there would have been better planning to allow full discussion for everyone. She continued to ask several questions about housing and tenants, specifically about renters' service charges. This is not the only occasion in recent times that Councillor Horan has raised concerns to Winchester City councillors about the future of the council's housing assets. At a full council on Wednesday, November the 6th, civic chiefs heard how a total of 1,043 homes are empty, and 433 of which are in Winchester City, prompting some to wonder whether they couldn't be reclaimed to ease the housing crisis.
Party train steams back to light up the countryside. A magical party train is back, steaming across the Hampshire countryside, making an awesome sight for whoever passes by. The Watercress Line Steam Illuminations is back for another year, and its first train left on November the 29th. The spectacular illuminated train will run until January the 4th, offering an unforgettable party experience under the dazzling glow of 1,000 coloured LED lights. Actually, thousands of coloured LED lights. We were on one of the first trains to leave, departing from Alresford for a jaunt up to Alton and back. Alresford Station is beautiful at any time of the year, but it really comes into its own at Christmas, when it is decked out in thousands of lights. The platform features decorated Christmas trees, stalls selling mulled wine and hot dogs, and two giant electronic trees that sing and talk. My kids loved it. On arrival, we were given LED wristbands that synchronise with the train's music. Once aboard, the night is hosted by Britain's Got Talent voiceover man, who coordinates singing songs and games, playing songs, telling jokes, and makes the entertainment fun. We arrived in Alresford a bit earlier than departure and made the most of the excellent cafe there, buying sausage rolls and chips and stocking up on goodies to eat on the train. Ready-made treat boxes, which contain everything you'd need for a trip on the train, including neon glasses, are available to order. Each station has been lovingly decorated, and even Alton, the working train station, with connecting modern trains where we stop for a break and for the engine to switch ends, looks beautiful. On our way back, we marvelled at the magical snow-like cascade, a new enchanting display of falling lights that can be seen from the window along the tracks that look like real snow. I was on board with my two children, but there were groups of every age on the same train, from grandparents with young children to party nights, and the train made for a unique evening adventure, and everybody got into the spirit, singing and dancing. There was no Santa this year, however, that made a nice change. We didn't miss him, as we were too busy having a good time. The whole train is decked out in flashing lights and really is a sight to behold. Tickets cost £32 per person, children under two free, or a compartment for up to six people is £250. And there are lots of pictures of the illuminations and lights, and I must say it does look really fun.
Floors to rent as Burger Bar opens. Burger-craving citizens will now be able to get their fixes as Five Guys has opened in Winchester High Street. The American burger chain, world famous for its smash burgers, seemingly bottomless fries and celebratory fans, opened on Monday, December the 2nd. It was a soft launch without any ceremony, but the new staff and management immediately had a growing queue of customers on their hands. The company was founded in Washington, D.C. in 1986 by three brothers and has since taken the world by storm. It has 1,800 restaurants worldwide and 171 in the UK alone. Five Guys has taken one of the three units in the former Debenhams department store. The other two are Nando's, which is open last month, and Pizza Express. The opening comes as the upper floors of the building have been advertised for rent. AG&G describe the unit as a prime location with flexible space, with the ceilings ranging from 4 metres to a potential 8 metres. This comes as key players involved in the development of the city centre push for more of the space in the upper floors of the buildings on the high street to be utilised. Gentian Developments, for example, have recently applied to turn the upper floors of the former Closs and Hamblin unit at 7 to 8 High Street into 12 flats. The Nando's opening on November the 20th elicited both positive and negative reactions from Wintonians, with hundreds of people flocking to sample the chain's Portuguese-style grilled chicken. Branch manager Adrian Grabowski said, "Coming to Winchester, I have met lots of people who have told me how excited they are to have Nando's here as well." Five Guys has also submitted an application to Winchester City Council for an outdoor seating. The business is hoping to have tables and seating outside the shop between 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. The notice says that the outside furniture at the Five Guys is hoping to use includes 4 tables, 8 chairs and 8 barriers. To submit representation in connection with the application, email licensing at winchester.go, I think it's meant to be .co.uk. And there's a picture of the old Debenhams store with its Debenhams sign outside. I must admit that you'll never go hungry in Winchester.
This is the it's a drone photographer's images of the year, and it's entitled "The Eye in the Sky." And the starting point for this is a spectacular photograph taken on the A272 near Cheesfoot Head, and it shows a fire engine which has skidded off the road, crashed through a hedge, and is lying on its side. And so this is the story. A shocking photo of a fire engine on its side near Winchester is one of a drone photographer's top images of the year. The picture, which shows the vehicle having punched through a hedge before coming to a stop on its side, was taken on the A272 near Cheesfoot Head by Chris Gorman of The Big Cheese Photography in March. Chris, who has been a drone photographer for more than 7 years, said that he took the photo after accidentally stumbling across the scene. He told the Chronicle, "I just happened to drive past it. I was on my way to another job in Bath, and I drove past it. I saw it. I originally thought it was a lorry on its side, and then thought, what's going on there? I thought, if I can stop for a picture, I will. If it's easy, I will. If not, I'll carry on. Luckily for me, it was easy to stop on this country road, so I pulled in and got my mini drone out, flew it over the field, and got the photo. It was only when I pulled it up on the screen that I knew it was a fire engine. Chris explained that every year he puts together a list of his favourite photos that he has put together that year. It included the fire engine due to it being different to the images he normally photographs. And he said, "I'll be honest, as you can see, most of my pictures are landscapes, but that picture went bananas when I took it. It actually took me by surprise, if I'm honest. I put the picture out to newspapers and then I gave it to the Hampshire Chronicle. Sometimes, as a photographer, it's like being a reporter. You put stuff out and you think, that's really good. And you put it to your editor and no one cares. Pictures are very much like that. Every news outlet has its own agenda and sometimes it can sink like a stone. So, I put the photos out and thought, oh, I think that's quite good. I don't know if anyone is going to be interested in it. And everyone went bananas over it. It was used by the Mail Online, and the Daily Star used it. Bizarrely, it went viral on Facebook, and I guess that's because it was a fire engine and the unique angle it was shot. Other photos that Chris has taken in his Best of the Year roundup include a photo of the Neuschwanstein Castle, one of the inspirations for the castle in the Disney logo, as well as Stonehenge and people lounging on lilos at the Petersfield Open Air Swimming Pool. Now, it's a little bit difficult, this, but there's a series of photographs. Obviously, the main one is of the fire engine crashing through, or having crashed through, the hedge. He's got a brilliant shot of Stonehenge. Again, all of these are taken from a drone. And it's just a clear, very, very clear day. And the shadows cast by Stonehenge are quite interesting. He's got another one here of a number of horses with their riders taking a weekend stroll across the Golden Sands at West Wittering Beach. And again, he's almost directly above the horses, but because of the angle of the light, you see an enormous shadow, which is exactly the shape of the horse and its rider. And finally, he's got one of the Petersfield Open Air Pool, and taken from directly above the pool, and you've got all these lilos floating around on the pool with people enjoying themselves on. So it's some quite spectacular photographs.
Delighted with new rating. Staff and pupils at a Winchester school are delighted with their latest Ofsted rating of, quotes, good in all categories. The recent inspection at Stanmore Primary School noted that pupils enjoy attending this happy school, and marked a significant improvement from the last review of the school, which found it required improvement. The report also highlighted that strong relationships between pupils, families and staff thrive in its positive and safe community. It stated that the school's expectations of pupils were high, with its vision, quotes, to be the best that you can be, permeating through school life. Pupils were noted to achieve well, be self-motivated and work hard in lessons. The report continues that pupils behave well and benefit from a wide range of enrichment opportunities, including a school orchestra and choir, Spanish lessons and a popular chess club. Head teacher Sharon Taylor was particularly pleased that the school was noted to be at the centre of its community and works well with other education settings and local services to support pupils to feel safe beyond the school gate. Ms. Taylor reported that she believed Stanmore Primary achieved such a glowing report due to developments made to the school over the past years, including an ambitious and well-sequenced curriculum, a forest school allowing pupils to learn outside, and opportunities for every child to learn an instrument through the Beyond the Beat programme, which has contributed to the school achieving a coveted Music Mark Award. She said she is pleased that the inspectors managed to capture the essence of, quotes, our happy and successful school, and recognised its significance at the heart of the Winchester community. Pupils behave well. The keys for success, a toolkit of skills such as confidence, organisation and resilience, help pupils to learn successfully. Pupils love taking home merit cards to show their families, having used the keys in lessons.
NHS calls out to forces personnel. Former armed forces personnel are being encouraged to join the NHS as Allied Health Professionals, AHPs. This initiative is part of a broader programme to increase the number of AHPs around 70,000 by 2036-37. More than 100 veterans have already shown interest by signing up for events where experts from organisations such as Guy's and St Thomas's present the roles and responsibilities of an AHP's. The programme is a collaboration between Guy's and St Thomas's, NHS England and several universities aimed at recruiting both serving and retired armed forces personnel as well as their families into 14 allied health professions. The events, which are set to continue until March 2025, showcase the work of occupational therapists, dietitians and operating department practitioners. Winchester resident Alex Oliver, an operating department practitioner, joined Guy's and St Thomas's in 2019 after serving 12 years in the Royal Navy. He moved into the NHS after getting married and wanting a more settled life at home. He said, "I always had the interest in science and we trained as level 3 first aiders in the Navy. I originally thought about doing nursing and did a year of nursing at King's College Hospital. But one day I went into the operating theatres at Guy's Hospital for a patient follow-through and I thought, wow, this is a completely different atmosphere. It's more dynamic and more suited to environments I'd been to in the past." During the COVID-19 pandemic, Alex was able to use his military background to help. He said, "The pace changed and suddenly we were responding to an emergency. But in terms of organisation and putting new policies and procedures in place, that was the stuff I'd done before. I got involved in trying to implement the cleaning routines without cross-contamination, which was similar to the Navy and their chemical biological warfare routines." Alex also sees similarities in communication styles between the operating theatre and a warship. Fiona Sanford, a consultant physiotherapist and clinical lead of armed forces at Guy's and St Thomas's, said, "As an armed forces spouse, I know the resilience and adaptability and dedication of the armed forces community. These are just the transferable skills that we are looking for in the NHS." And there's a picture of Alex in his operating scrubs, I believe, after his 12 years in the Navy.
Singers are on song for charity. People gathered to sing carols in the candlelight at a Winchester City Hotel for a good cause. The Winchester Royal Hotel held a carols event in its garden on Monday, November the 25th. And guests were treated to mulled wine, hot chocolate and mince pies while listening to a performance from Winchester a cappella, directed by Oliver Squid. Donations made on the night went to Naomi House and Jack's Place Hospice, a children's hospice in Sutton Scotney, and Linda Crook, a senior fundraiser at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "What a special way to kick off the festive period. It was such a lovely evening of beautiful carol singing in a gorgeous setting. We are delighted to be partnering with the Winchester Royal Hotel and thank the fabulous team and their clientele so much for their kindness in supporting our hospices." And this is accompanied by a photograph, and there's, I don't know, it's probably about 20-25 ladies here, all dressed out exactly the same in red dresses with, I suppose, white edges around the neck and around the wrists, and red floppy hats, again detailed in white, and they all look to be having an absolutely fabulous time.
Artist 105 reunited with painting from 80 years ago. 100-year-old care home resident has been reunited with a painting she created nearly 80 years ago. Dorothy Frey, a resident at Brendon Care, Otterburn Hill, was identified by Leanne Broyd, the well-being supervisor at the home, as the artist of a long-lost painting. Leanne's grandparents, Annie and Ernie Spreadbury, once worked for Dorothy. The discovery was made by Leanne's mother, Margaret Brooks, 84, who spotted Dorothy's former home while driving through Bishopstoke. Margaret still owns a painting of the cottage created by Dorothy for her parents nearly 18 years ago, complete with Dorothy's signature. Leanne said, "I spent one morning with Dorothy talking about art and drawing. I printed off some pictures and was amazed when she started using artistic terms such as depth of field, which I thought was quite unusual." Margaret, who still lives with her late parents, still lives in her late parents' house in Fair Oak Road, visited Dorothy with the painting and photographs of her parents. Margaret said, "It's such an amazing coincidence." And there's a picture of Dorothy Frey in her bed with Margaret Brooks, whatever, with the painting of a really lovely old thatched cottage with flowers and trees. It's a beautiful painting. Looking quite happy to see her painting again.
Tribute to Mum inspired funeral celebrants' work. An Oxford woman has shared her journey to becoming a funeral celebrant after organising a meaningful ceremony for her mum. Shuna Hubble, who is now a fully-fledged celebrant, accredited by Humanist UK, was inspired to help others after creating a truly meaningful tribute for her mother, who died after a long struggle with dementia. She said, "Remarkably, organising this little ceremony really helped me process my loss. I came away feeling so much happier than when I had embarked on it, knowing that we had really done justice to a special person. It was such a positive emotion that I thought it would be great to help others process their own loss in a similar way, creating celebrations that were meaningful and appropriate for their loved ones." Shuna said that she looked into different options for celebrant training, but Humanist UK really stood out for the rigour of their teaching and the support they give their new celebrants. The bulk of the training consisted of two residentials at the University of Warwick. She said, "It was about funeral celebrants that make them such great company. I think it's they're genuinely interested in people and have warmth and integrity and a sense of humour. They're also amazing listeners. These people came from all types of backgrounds. There was a teacher, a marketing exec, a CEO of a huge charity, two university lecturers, a professional DJ. But the thing they had in common was that they exuded empathy. Being with them was like being surrounded by a warm hug. The training itself was described as less of a hug and more of an ice bath, with comprehensive lessons about funeral formats, humanist thinking, and how to deal with funeral directors, followed by written assignments." Shuna said, "Crafting the ceremony was the part I enjoyed most. Weaving funny and poignant stories into a person's life history and trying to ensure that everyone at the ceremony would feel seen and included. I came to realise it's a real art and one I'm still learning." She said the work is enriching in so many other ways, and that she has witnessed abject heartbreak, dogged resilience, unfailing courage, and the blackest of humour. And she added, "It's been a privilege to enter these people's lives at a period of such intense emotion. Every single person I have celebrated has been someone I wish I had met." And there is a picture of Shona.
Christmas pop-up shop back at Brooks. A Christmas pop-up shop has returned to the Brooks Shopping Centre in Winchester. Mr. and Mrs. Claus have been welcomed back to the upper floor, filling the unit between HMV and Mooies. The seasonal store sells festive decorations and gifts and is open every day until December the 24th. The business is run by partners Mandy Chalk and Graham Budd, known as Mr. and Mrs. Claus. The pair started the business 15 years ago, originally opening in one of the Winchester Cathedral Christmas market huts, before moving into empty shops in the Brooks around 8 years ago to have more space. Mandy told the Chronicle, "It's a family business, and we've been doing this for quite a long time now. We have a lot of people coming in, and we've been building up a following on our Facebook page. People are always pleased to see us back. It's nice to be part of the community. Being a local and being part of the community is really nice." She continued, "We have a lot of different lines this year, including new gingerbread. We're selling a lot this year, which is great. Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus is open from 10 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon, Monday to Friday, and from 9 in the morning till 6 p.m. on Saturday, and 10 till 4:30 in the afternoon on Sundays. For more information, go to facebook.com/, and this is a continuous string, Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus.
Progress on MP's bill to ban pet mutilation. The MP for Winchester's parliamentary fight for a law to ban the sale of mutilated animals has beaten its first hurdle. Former vet Danny Chambers' private member's bill to clamp down on illegal puppy smuggling passed its second reading and will proceed to the committee stage. At the next stage, a specially convened committee of MPs, a public bill committee, that reflects the political composition of the House as a whole, will do a line-by-line consideration of the bill's details. Dr. Chambers said, "I'd like to thank the Dogs Trust, RSPCA and the British Veterinary Association for supporting this bill and campaigning on this issue for many years, and now DEFRA, who are putting their support behind the bill too. Also, to all the individual backers across the country who wrote to their MPs asking them to back the bill. I was delighted to see many MPs from across the political spectrum vote with me to move this bill forward." The MPs team said pet mutilations such as ear cropping, tail docking and declawing are still widespread in the UK, despite such cruel procedures being illegal. Why? Import of animals that have already had these procedures is still legal. Not only does this create a market for mutilated animals in the UK, leading to a flow of animals being transported to the UK under inhumane conditions, but it also allows domestic abusers to claim animals were imported even if the procedures had been carried out locally. The best way to end the abuse is to shut down the import loophole. Danny Chambers intends to introduce new legislation to do that. The British Veterinary Association, the RSPCA and Dogs Trust are backing the legislation. Dr. Chambers said, "As a vet, I've treated many dogs with cruelly cropped ears or dock tails, leaving them physically scarred and emotionally traumatised. There is no excuse for these mutilations in the 21st century. But this bill is about more than animal welfare. We're also protecting public health because dogs that have been smuggled into the UK could be carrying terrifying diseases that affect humans, such as rabies. Although mutilating dogs and cats has been illegal in the UK for over a decade, a troubling loophole has been allowed the continued sale of mutilated animals with cropped ears, dock tails or declawed paws."
Hub to boost rural policing. Police in two Hampshire towns are teaming up in a bid to respond to incidents more quickly. Two new district policing teams, DPT, hubs have been created, one at Meham Valley Police Station in Hoe Road, Bishop's Waltham, and another at the 100 in Romsey. 20 DPT officers have started working from the stations following the launch of the initiative. Assistant Chief Constable Tara McGovern said, "Last year we moved back to a geographical model of policing to bring us much closer to the communities we serve. The opening of these hubs will mean shorter response times for when people need us the most and allow greater flexibility for local commanders to manage their resources." Chief Inspector Clorine Bishop, Winchester District Commander, said, "This will help us better support Bishop's Waltham and other rural communities." And there's a picture of Corinne Bishop and the Assistant Chief Constable Tara McGovern with three male police officers standing behind them.
Community store offers a taste of local produce. a volunteer-run community shop, held a special tasting event showcasing produce from Hampshire businesses. The event was held at the Candover Valley store in Preston, Candover, on November the 29th and November the 30th. The special Christmas tasting saw half a dozen local producers visit the shop, where they could meet customers, chat about their items, and share free samples. Neighbours and local producers Tim Hides and Margot Don from Bradley attended the event together. Tim, who produces honey for Hampshire Honey, said, "We have got the village shop here, which has been open for 5 years, and they have always been very good to local people like us with our produce, and it's our way of supporting the local community shop. The fact that I just spoke to a local customer said that she always puts my honey on her cereal every morning, and she asked me to supply it by the gallon. It's nice to get that sort of feedback. And coming to places like this, it's a chance for the people who are buying produce to see who we are." Margot, who makes apple juice at Bradley Orchard, said, "I think it is very good that our shops support small local producers. It's nice to meet the people who buy our goods regularly." Victoria Hartman from Chalk Stream Trout called the event a wonderful opportunity for local producers to showcase their wares. "We are very grateful to community shops like this for supporting us." Kelvin Lewington from the Homemade Brownie Company in Basingstoke had brought several samples for visitors to try, and he said, "We like to highlight our produce, so being able to do so at one of our retailers is a great opportunity. We have done it at a few other places as well, but it's nice to meet some of the customers who come here and buy the products, and hopefully we'll convert some new ones as well." Lucy Munsey and Jocelyn Rogerson, members of the Candover Valley Store Management Committee, said that they believed the event was going well. And Jocelyn said, "We've noticed over the past couple of Christmases is that more and more customers are coming in to buy products. And what's really lovely is we've had people travelling to France but taking English fares, Hampshire fares such as cheeses, with them as gifts. So we thought it would be an ideal opportunity to build on that and showcase some of the lovely products we sell. It's our first real dip of a toe in the water, and we're really delighted that people have been able to come along." And he's accompanied by a photograph of some of the team at the Candover Valley store, and a great work they're doing.
Shop. Two little items about the Theatre Royal. First, Santa show at the Royal. Santa Claus is coming to Winchester Theatre this Christmas. Santa's Christmas Cracker, a fun-filled musical story, will be coming to the Theatre Royal Winchester on Monday, December the 16th. Santa's Christmas Cracker is a fun musical adventure telling the story of a lost penguin who has never heard of Christmas, and Father Christmas, Dotty the Elf, and Dasher, the reindeer's quest to teach him all about the most wonderful time of the year, while busy making toys, decorating the Christmas tree, and getting presents onto the sleigh. This interactive performance is specially suited to young children aged 2 to 8 and features well-loved festive tunes. The other little item is headed Dial M for Mayhem. Comedy theatre fans are invited to a play packed with drama and behind-the-scenes chaos. Dial M for Mayhem will be coming to Theatre Royal Winchester in January. Set in 1991, it follows a group of travelling actors from the south of the Scottish border as they perform Frederick Knott's classic 1950s thriller, Dial M for Murder, in Highland and Island village halls. Written and directed by the team behind the courtroom drama The Verdict, Margaret May Hobbs and Michael Lunny, Dial M for Mayhem features Alistair Baker, Estrid Barton, Isabella Inchbald, Joey Lockhart, Luke Rodri and Theo Wolford.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent. Goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.